Stats can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centres Canada in making a difference today.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Thank you for your constant support. You help keep independent community radio alive.
Welcome to another edition of Back Porch Bluegrass. I'm your host, Paul Trenwith, and do I have a great show lined up for you. I've got a guest in the studio with me, young Dan Cosgrove, who is a local musician and recording engineer and record producer. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, very good, thanks. It's going to be great fun talking to you about your recording processes and things like that, and just analysing a bit of the bluegrass music that I'm going to play. That was me and Colleen and friends playing about 1987 or something like that. That was a tune, and I bet you were listening to the mix and thought, well, I could have had that a bit higher and could have had that lower.
No, it was killer. It was awesome. Loved it.
Now, here's one that you might like. This guy reminds you of you. You might have heard his name, Dan Tominski.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a man who actually did The Man of Constant Sorrow and the Oh Brother, We're Out There. He was George Clooney's voice, and he's a great musician, plays with Alison Krauss, or did do, and as you can imagine, has a great band. And here he is, title track of an album that he did many years ago called Wheels, and I think you might enjoy this.
nothing but my goals. Best if I forget the way I'm riding. Heading down a one-way track. Wind is cold upon my back. Rumbling of this old steel rail don't die. We waiting games I could not win. Always ended up again. Just might help this time. Watch a daylight turn to black. Long since smoked up my last pack. Dreamed of one day getting off this line.
Good, aren't they?
That was awesome.
Oh, they just play so well and so hard. We managed to see him live in 2008 at a bluegrass festival, and I know Tim was over there with me with the bluegrass band, and Alan and David, and we watched them and thought, can there be a better set of bluegrass music? You know, we couldn't even imagine anyone doing a set that was better than what Dan Tominski did. Then Blue Highway came along and just totally blew us away.
Yeah. You know?
And these guys just play so well. I suppose we've been doing that too, but it was just lovely to see those people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what I'm doing is just feeding you some ideas, and then we'll start talking to you about your projects.
Sure.
This is a brand new album from a singer who I really like, Claire Lynch, and brand new in terms that it's just arrived at my place in about 2 weeks ago, and it's 2026, and I'm going to play the title track. It's called Empty Pair of Shoes, something a bit different. Woman singer, which you do a bit of recording. She plays guitar usually and does the lead vocals. We've got Jason Fowler on acoustic guitar, Mark Schatz on bass, and Don Rook on a Kona, whatever a Kona is. I have no idea what that
is. We'll try to pick it out.
Yeah, we might be able to find out from this. Here's Claire Lynch from her brand new album, Empty Pair of Shoes, with the title track. Thank you. Well, that's sort of whether you call it bluegrass or not, I don't know. It seems to me that acoustic guitars must be the hardest thing in the world to record trying to decide on what sort of sound you like. Anyway, I'll introduce you again. Dan Cosgrove is a local musician in Hamilton. He's a music teacher in Hamilton. He's been playing in bands and country bands and miscellaneous covers bands and all sorts of bands. for most of his life. What are you now? How old are you now?
I'm 35.
35? Mm-hmm. Gosh, I've probably known you for 20 years or more.
Yeah.
And yesterday I was called in to play some banjo on a track that Dan was recording, and while I was doing it I thought he'd be a great person to interview for the radio show, and he consented to come in. So the next day we're in the studio and I'm asking about his recording career. Okay, Dan, what inspired you to start recording?
Well, I've always had this interest in recording. I've been a performer for my whole life, and I've always dabbled bits and pieces in high school. I did some recording, little things at home, just low-tech things. And it was that I studied audio production at uni, but I never really did anything professional at home with it until the COVID lockdowns, and we were way it actually started is our band did these little recordings from home where everyone would record their parts and they'd send it to me, and I would put it all together into a song. And we did these videos that got really good reception. And that's kind of where the studio started. And I think someone messaged me and said, hey, that's awesome. Can you do my album like that?
Wow.
And that's how it started.
Wow, what a great way to do it. I'm always amazed at when I go into a studio, even a home studio lot, like yours, as to how much gear you've got. You know, there's racks of things sitting there with flashing lights and, you know, multiple microphone stands and various forms of, dynamic and condenser microphones and things like that. Did you just go out and buy it all?
So when I got the call for that first album, I thought I'd better get some gear. So I went out and got the basics. I got a better computer that could handle it, and I got one okay-ish vocal mic. Started really basic and an interface.
Yes.
And then as I recorded more and as I felt like I got better, I slowly would buy one piece of gear to sort of try to get everything up to the level. Yes. So when I'd buy a better piece of gear, I'd think, I'll get something else that matches that. Yes. And that hasn't ended yet.
It doesn't end.
No, I don't think. Yeah.
I remember a recording friend of mine, John Raphael, with whom we did many of our early recordings, and he had a great ear for it. And I've never seen him so excited. He got this new reverb unit that cost a fortune. Yeah. And he said, this is the best thing I've ever had. And I thought, you excited about a reverb unit? You know? it doesn't end.
Yeah.
What sort of program do you use? I know there's a whole bunch of different programs that you use. Did you have to hunt to find one, or did you just buy one and learn it?
Yeah, so I use Pro Tools, which is one of the industry standards, I guess you'd call it. There's a few of them. That's what I learned in uni. So it was the one I was most familiar with. And I'd used free versions over the years that kind of have limitations.
Yes.
And then so when I started doing it professionally, then I went ahead and bought the professional version. You get a lot more tracks, you get a lot more little features and things. So Pro Tools is what I know, so that's what I would use.
Do you think you know the program now, or do you keep finding new stuff?
Keep finding new stuff. I know it pretty well now, but there's still every few months I find something new, or someone tells me a new trick. It's quite a in-depth program. There's a lot to it, and a lot of little shortcuts that you don't realise that you can do that make things a little bit more efficient.
Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah, I guess the aim is to capture the studio thing. I know when I go into a studio and we were recording, my intention was always to capture the way that we sounded.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sort of grown in more recent years to think, well, that's not entirely true. You know, it's take take what you sound like and make it sound better or whatever, you know. So it gets complicated from there on. And
it starts at the source. That's still the most important thing, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
If the source is good, that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Do you do albums like that first one you said that really got you going? Mm. Mostly that, or what? What's the question? Why are you? What do you record?
So yeah, it's I'm doing another album at the moment as well. It's usually singles. Clients will come to me, so I specialise in, I guess you'd say, country solo artists.
Yes.
Not so much country bands.
Right.
Because my studio setup is really set up for a solo artist.
Yep.
So a solo artist will come to me with a song idea, and so it's usually just acoustic. I've written a song, and I sort of build it up from there.
Yes.
So it's usually singles at this stage, but there's a couple of EPs and albums.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but it usually starts right at the sort of songwriting level. And
are you the executive producer and the arranger and the musical director on most of those?
It sort of it depends on the client. Some artists have it pretty well sought out already, and the song is pretty much built, and it's just a case of recording on top.
Yeah.
Some people have a really basic version of a song, and they want, so I give them a bit of help structuring it and fixing up little bits. But yeah, I guess producer and recording, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Mm. One thing that's always interested me is in recording is how do you sort of capture raw talent without being critical and aiming for perfection? Because, you know, I mean, the guy that thought Bob Dylan was brilliant is an amazing person, because probably 80% of the world would have thought, oh, that guy sounds terrible. Mm. You know, let's not record him. And I think of some of the world famous artists. I wouldn't have recorded Johnny Cash, but that just shows I know nothing. You know, and Bob Dylan was there. You know, and presented it. At what point do you think I can do something with this voice, or I can capture that, or that's special, or they're hard decisions, I reckon.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, it is hard. It is hard. You can usually hear, I like to think you can hear it right off the bat with an artist.
Yes.
If they have that something special.
Yeah.
And you want to preserve that as well. You don't want to cover it up with all this fancy stuff sometimes, especially when you've got a voice that's so unique, you really want to just keep it. So there's a fine line, I think, of putting things around it that sound awesome, but while still preserving that uniqueness.
Yeah, it is. Mm. Okay, so if I came to you and said, I want to record two tracks that I've written, and I want my family to be able to have a copy of these musics, and I'll play guitar and sing it, but I want it to sound like a country song or something like that, what would you do?
I'd get them in and would start with scratch tracks and getting them just guitar and vocals sort of thing, play along to a click. I usually work with a click and a metronome, and start from there, and then we'd talk about what instrumentation we want. And usually the next step, once that vocal and acoustic or piano is down, is recording the drums.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually work with a partner studio called The Wardrobe in Huntley.
Oh.
And they have a great drum tracking setup, because my little studio is a bit small for a drum setup.
Yes.
So the next step is we take the client up to the studio and we record drums.
Okay.
There's an engineer up there called Casey Messant, and he sort of engineers the session, sits at the desk and does all that, and I get to sit on a chair and just produce, which is amazing. So I can just listen and say, hey, we should try this, that's awesome.
Yes.
And I get a drummer up called Joshua Blakey. He's from Christchurch, and he's a great drummer. So, yeah, drums is usually that step. And then from there, it's back to my studio, and it's sort of building up other things like electric guitars, bass, percussion.
Mm.
And then off to specialist people like yourself, Paul, and
if you need some banjo, you might get me. And Tim played double bass on the track. Yeah,
that was my first time actually recording double bass.
They're pretty hard to record, I would imagine.
I tried some different things. Yeah, it was fun. I loved it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Look, I'm going to. I better put in a word for our sponsors, and then I'll play you another couple of tracks.
Sure.
You're listening to Free FM 89.0, independent community media, and my name's Paul Trendworth. I'm the host, and I'm interviewing Dan Cosgrove about his recording studio. This show, did I say, comes to you from Free FM 89.0 in Hamilton, New Zealand. That's where we are. And our sponsors are Shearer's Music Works, and they're the people that provide anything you need to play music, and for strings, picks, plectrums, thumb picks, capos, guitar straps, stands for your guitar, up to a New Martin guitar. You can get them at Shearer's Music Works, and I'm very pleased that they are sponsoring Back Porch Bluegrass. We do all sorts of things, and they don't tell me what I have to talk about, and I don't tell them what to sell in their shop. That's all right. Look, I'm going to play a bit more bluegrass for you, Dan, and the next track is coming from one of my favourite bands. It's called the Bluegrass Album Band, which is a strange name, but it was a bit of a put-together band with Tony Rice. Had a recording contract that he needed to fill, so he got mates around with whom he'd played before, and they recorded some of the old standards of bluegrass music, right? You know, that people learned their bluegrass music from listening to the Stanley Brothers or Flatten Scruggs or Bill Monroe or Jimmy Martin or someone like that. And these guys, this was in the mid-80s, they were the ones who learned from the masters, you know, and they put together these tracks. Well, they were so successful, they did 6 or 7 albums.
Wow.
And they just about the Bible of how to play bluegrass music, you know. And there's a classic track from Flat and Scruggs, originally, Your Love Is Like a Flower. And this, they just did it right as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And we're going to hear them play now. Let's listen to the Bluegrass Album Band.
Thank you. Oh, they tell me your love's like a flower.
Just about my all-time favourite track, really.
So one. Nice, loved it.
It's got all the ingredients, Yeah, love that mandolin rhythm.
Yeah, loved it. That chopping, yeah.
That's a snare drum, you know.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way to describe it.
Yeah.
Much of bluegrass music is structured depending on who's doing what. Now, you've got your standard lineup of banjo, mandolin, fiddle, dobro, guitar, bass, say that. Yeah. That's the usual ones. But it depends on who the singers are. Yeah. Because if your lead singer is a guitarist, which it most often is, you can get backup for the verses from the other instruments like mandolin or fiddle or banjo will do the backup, you know. Mm. If the lead singer is the bass player, the guitarist might do some backup in the verse. Mm. Yeah. When it's the chorus and there's three people singing, they probably won't be driving banjo all the way through it if the banjo player is doing the baritone like J.D. Crowe was there.
Yeah.
And the mandolin player was doing the tenor, so all he'd be doing is vamping at the most if he was singing, you see. So, but if the tenor was done by the bass player, the mandolin could be doing backup.
Yeah,
so it all depends on the structure of the band. This concept of bluegrass music is the players are the singers as well, changes the structure of the band, and that's really quite hard to capture.
Yeah,
okay. And I know I've always liked recording the music live, but it doesn't always work to get the best sound. Yeah. But when you're overdubbing, you have to remember that, you know, well, we're not going to have guitar backup going while the guitarist is singing, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet, to a listener, it probably doesn't matter, but to me, it mattered. Anyway, so that was Flat and Scruggs. Now, back in the day, Flat and Scruggs were the first bluegrass band that I ever heard, and it was a live concert at Carnegie Hall, and they had two microphones, as you do, two condenser microphones, and all the harmony was done around one microphone. Mm-hmm. You know, they all stood, you know, 2 feet away from the mics and sang, and the other one was for fiddle and banjo solos and things like that. Mm. And I'm going to play a track